Seventh Grade Conference, Lecture 64. This is the third part of physiology. Before we go into the depths of the metabolic system, let's just remain for a moment at the other end. And we talked about our teeth, we talked about our taste and our so-called taste buds. We talked about the largest muscle in the body, which is the tongue, and how our mouth is already a kind of reflection of what is going to go on, a kind of microcosm of all that will be occurring throughout the whole digestive system. We could say that our teeth definitely represent a kind of skeletal quality that's going on. The saliva, the whole fluid quality of our nature, and the muscular tongue, which also has a rhythmical quality. It's very different. For example, an anthroposophical physician will talk about this. It's very different if you take medicine sublingually, under the tongue, or if you just eat it as though it were food or just let it flow down on the tongue. You'd think, well, it's going to the same place anyway. When you do something sublingually, it makes a much faster connection with the blood. In fact, Ross Rantea, one anthroposophical physician, claims it is essentially like giving an injection of that substance. So if you don't have a syringe available and you have the liquid, you can take it sublingually and it will have that same rapidity. It sort of skips a bit the intermediary steps. Very interesting. But back to the teeth. So we spent some time examining these. Why? Well, here you can bring in, if you're on the health and hygiene school of approach here, you know, this is a major area of care. In the United States, it is said that you can almost immediately tell a person's social class by looking at their teeth, because in the U.S., we do not have any system that is really an intelligent one of dental insurance. And so people who can and can't afford that kind of care and or who also have different eating habits will have a very different reflection of the teeth. So, of course, most of the children in the independent Waldorf school are those who belong at the upper end of the financial economic scale. And what's happening to them? Their teeth are already getting the best care that modern dentistry can give, which includes orthodontic work. When I was growing up in New York City in the 1950s, living in a very low end of the scale, in my housing project, I never saw anybody with braces. In fact, in my junior high school in Astoria, Queens, New York, I never saw anybody with braces. It was only when I went to as a waiter to a fancy summer camp, it was the first time that I saw 13 and 14-year-old girls with braces. And even they were the exception in the camp. That was in the 1950s, mid to late 50s. How that has changed. Now, you know, you see 9-year-olds with braces and their mothers as well. This is a very interesting matter, the, you know, cosmetic quality that we're giving to the teeth. And I think it's just something to bring to the students' attention, that the younger you put braces in, the less you are trusting in the development of the jaw and the skull, that those grow, those continue to grow, those change, and you're sort of not trusting that a lot of what seems like crowding in particular, or crooked teeth and all of that, that if given a chance, some of that will actually take care of itself. A lot of it will. Whereas we are strongly affecting the development then of the jaw and in turn the entire skull by suddenly determining for ourselves how we want those teeth to look. And one might say that this is sort of a general distrust of destiny. I'm not saying any of this to the children, but just to be aware that in a private Waldorf school, a very strong intervention in the children's destiny has occurred by straightening the teeth. And as I say, younger and younger that we're doing that. And so that's one aspect of this sort of work that goes on. In charter schools, maybe you're going to see less of that. And in a way, that's a blessing in disguise. But on the other hand, in a charter school, you're probably going to see more children eating sugary, syrupy foods that are a threat to their teeth. So that's something to discuss, how the hardness of enamel nonetheless is also the most threatened substance in the body and how easily it gets attacked by what they eat. So we talked a lot about that. And also here again, we have a threefolding, the front teeth and the canine teeth and the molars. How we could say the incisors are very much like the thinking pole. They are breaking, just, you know, breaking off the food. The canine teeth are dividing it into little pieces, so there's more of a rhythmical quality about them. And the molars then are grinding it down and giving it its final form so that mixed with saliva, it can create the bolus. We share the incisors, as you might have taught the children in zoology, with the rodents. We share the canine teeth, obviously, with dogs and other predatory animals. And we share lions, and we share the molars with the metabolic animals, the ungulates. So that alone is very beautiful, that the three steps of digestion are there in the teeth as well. And then it's brought into a fluid state. As I said, then it goes into the rhythmic realm, the very top of the stomach, which is on the same level as the heart, showing us that the stomach is also partly a rhythmical organ. It's also a muscular organ, like the heart. And one thing that the bolus must have done, or one of its qualifications before this cardiac sphincter will allow it to move on, is that it must be body temperature. So this is really important. We'll see this about the air we breathe as well. How hard our body must work so that the food is 98.6 degrees before it enters the stomach. And how much stress in our time of ice cubes and frozen foods and ice cream and all of these wonderful treats for us, how much we are, what stress and strain we are placing on our stomach in particular, and then by extension on our whole metabolic system by not having food that's warm enough. And for those of you listening in Europe in particular, you probably know how difficult it is when you go with an American to a restaurant and they can't drink the water or the wine because it's not cold enough for them. And you know perfectly well, it's much healthier to drink things at room temperature, which then is much less of a stress on the digestive system. And of course, we see all of the metabolic issues that Americans are prone to, and we have to wonder if part of it isn't the weakening of the digestive system from the time we're very young by all of the, frozen or at least icy cold substances that we are taking in. Something else that I bring to them. So here, these poor kids, all of the things that they love and hold dear, from the fact that they're going to have beautiful teeth to the fact that they like drinking cold soda, all of this is now suddenly being questioned. But once again, it's not just coming from their, dogmatic, totally weird teacher, but here we have scientific evidence to show that not all of this stuff is so harmless as they might think. Something else that's important, as we said, looking at food already starts our digestive system moving. Smelling food, tasting food, all of these things. And so let's say that I'm about to eat strawberries. Maybe I went out and picked them, and how nice. And that already made my mouth water, which shows it's not just the mouth. When your mouth is watering, your entire digestive system is active, is being brought into movement and readiness for what's to come. So I pick the strawberries, maybe clean them off a bit, pour cream over them, eat them. So I'm getting the whole wonderful range of experience of seeing them, smelling them, finally tasting them, and finally bringing them all the way to my metabolic system. Now, we have something, and these go back and forth in popularity, but for a while, the most popular thing in school were erasers that were made to look like strawberries and apples and pears. And they were beautifully done, wonderful creative work with this synthetic rubber. Not only did they look like a strawberry, but they also smelled like a strawberry. So on two levels, two senses are telling the child's digestive system, and not just the owner of the strawberry eraser, but everyone who sits around him, I could smell it from about 5 feet off myself. Everyone is being affected by this strawberry. And what's happening is the sight of it, which at least has an association. The children know that's not really a strawberry, but the association within the organism, which has already been set up over years by eating strawberries, that starts to get the digestive system churning. And then the smell, which remarkably simulates the real strawberry, that too gets the digestive system moving. Now, this is one object, one eraser, and we've already affected 5 or 7 children's digestive systems long before snack time. Are these the ones who are likely to say, "I'm hungry, when are we having snack?" More likely. And of course, who else is going to bring in an eraser to school that looks like a food item? Probably a child who's very, very much connected to snack time, a more phlegmatic child. But think of all of the things that we have, like sodas, which are, cherry flavored or vanilla flavored or whatever. All of the things that surround us that give our digestive system, our naive, always ready to cooperate digestive system, false messages that are feeding it, we might say, untruth. So I described to the students a situation that for some of them was all too familiar, where they're acting up a bit, they're 4 years old or 5 years old, and maybe it's daddy's day to take care of the children, and he's saying, "Please, please, be quiet, be quiet. Look, if you can behave for the next hour, I promise you we'll go to the zoo on Friday. I will take you there." "Oh, thank you, thank you. I'll be good, I'll be good." Well, Friday comes around, Daddy, it's time for the zoo. Oh my God, I know, I forgot. I have a couple of meetings back in the office. I can't do it. Wednesday. I'll take you on Wednesday, okay? Okay. Wednesday comes up, can't do it. Well, the father has by now completely forgotten about the promise. The child hasn't. And then the child gradually learns, you know, he keeps saying this stuff. It activates my will, but for him, it's just words. I don't really believe much of what he says altogether. He says all kinds of things, come to think of it. And by the time they're adolescents, of course, they've got this poor guy and his spouse figured out down to the dot on every I. They don't believe them fully. They don't trust them fully. And I said to them, this is not very different from what is going on in your digestive system. Your digestive system does not trust your senses anymore, which means that gradually over the years, for those of you who eat a lot of flavored foods and and smell things that have no real physical component, no substantiality that you're going to digest, your digestive system has become distrustful and distant from those sensory impressions. And for this reason, your sense of taste has gotten dulled, and your sensitivity to smell has gotten dulled. Remember last year in sixth grade when we were looking at the complementary colors and the after images, and how some of you saw vivid, vivid after images, and others saw almost nothing? And then we were talking about who spends more time in front of a screen, looking at the so-called colors on that screen, and who doesn't, who lives just in the world of real impressions, and how that changes your ability to perceive colors. Same thing with your ability to have taste, to savor your food, which means then that you're going to have food that has more intense flavoring. Every 2 or 3 years, you're going to need the next, spicy burrito, super spicy, and the chips that now have, 25 different possibilities of flavor. It gets stronger and stronger and stronger because your digestive system is getting separated from that. This is why people who insist on eating organic foods or who like slow food, like to cook it slowly, eat it slowly, and they really get the taste. They see how many foods, even vegetables, actually are sweet, but you've got to eat them slowly and you have to cook them in a special way, and they have to be fresh before those sugars turn to starch. Next year in organic chemistry, we'll be looking at this from a more objective outside view, but your chemistry class, your inward chemistry class, has been analyzing this stuff for a long, long time. And I can tell you that the fast food companies work at this around the clock in top secret places with security far exceeding that of an airport or even a place where bombs are being manufactured. They are working always on the next flavor sensation as people get kind of immune to the artificial synthetic flavorings and smells that are being provided by foods. So that's what we are doing to our metabolic system. We are lying to it. And I'm not saying this shows that you are like a wicked witch or anything like that. You don't even know that you're doing this. It's because the powers that be that manufacture and process your food are lying to you about its scrumptious strawberry taste or whatever the latest is. and therefore your metabolic system is suffering from this and becoming dull and sluggish. And we see then a host of illnesses which have a lot to do with the food that we eat. Just food for thought, seventh graders.